God's blessings to you this morning. Grace and peace to you in the name of our risen Savior. Let's see, Michael, did I remember to turn? Is my mic on? Okay, that's fine. I couldn't remember if I turned it on or not. I'm not used to using the Pastor Randy's infomercial mic here. So, all right. Well, you notice that the readings this morning were mainly about faith and doubt, belief and the struggle to believe. In the summer of 2000, Shelley and I took a group of about 20 high school students, along with some other adult chaperones, to Jamaica for a construction project at a blind school up in the mountainous part of the island, inland, very poor area up in the hills, an organization called the Caribbean Christian School for the Deaf. And on our very last day there, at the end of 2 weeks, we had a free day, and so we went to a place called Dunn's River Falls. And if you've ever seen any of the old Johnny Weissmuller Tarzan movies, Dunn's River Falls was at times a featured part in those films. It's an extended gradual waterfall that sort of just goes down in steps almost, where it's, as opposed to a waterfall that's just a sheer drop-off, it's a very gradual waterfall that goes down and down and down for quite some time, with each, you know, part being sort of a gradual step. And you essentially start at the end of the waterfall and you can climb up to the very top of the waterfall. It takes quite a while, but it's just a very fun thing to do for the day. And then you can climb back down and then go and swim in the Caribbean. But Shelley and I had been there before with a guide, and our guide at the time, when we had been there before, showed us that there was a portion in the falls that he claimed very few people knew about, and that was a spot about midway up into the falls where there was a certain formation of rocks where if you submerged yourself under the water and swam quite about 10 feet or so and came up underneath another formation of rocks, you would come up in essentially an air pocket where no one else could see you. And you were in sort of a small enclosed cave. And to all of the other people who were there, it would seem that you had simply disappeared underwater. But little did they know, you were in an enclosed cave air pocket where you could breathe just fine, but you were, to others, seemingly gone. And he had showed us and guided us at that time up under this little spot in Dunn's River Falls where we were there in this supposedly little known air pocket, and it was quite the experience. So when we went back with these 20 high schoolers, we were hiking up the falls, and the pastor's daughter was with us, and she was a senior in high school at the time, and we were guiding her, and Shelley and I did not have kids at the time, but we were certain that we would someday, and we wanted to get into the practice of terrorizing pastor's kids, and so we decided that we would not tell her about this air pocket, and we would see how she responded to it. And so as we were leading her up the falls, I said to her, "Oh, Christy, hold on just a second. I think I dropped something." And Shelley and I submerged ourselves under the water and went under the water and swam up underneath this air pocket. And we waited, and we waited, and we waited, and we waited, until the point where we knew that it was getting really awkward and uncomfortable for Christy, our pastor's daughter. And then finally we swam up and came out, and Christy's eyes were this big. And she said, "Is everything okay? You were underwater for like 5 minutes." And we said, no, we're fine. There's actually like a whole like room underneath there where you can breathe and walk around and stuff. Perfectly normal. Why don't you come under there? We'll show you. And she started backing up and she said, that's not possible underwater. People can't breathe underneath a waterfall. But I thought of all of that as I was looking in particular at these texts, because it reminded me of the fact that it is very natural for us to doubt that which we cannot see, right? You and I live in what one author referred to as the gap between promise and reality every day. The gap between promise and reality. We constantly hear the promise that, you know, God provides. And yet, meanwhile, perhaps you can't find a job, or you have outstanding debt or bills that need to be paid, and you're not sure where the money is going to come from. Or we constantly hear people say, God gives you strength, and yet meanwhile, you live with chronic pain, and you've been praying for years that God would bring you relief. Or we hear people say, you know, God works everything out. And meanwhile, you know that you live in conflict with someone very close to you because you have said something to them that you never believed you were capable of saying, and you weren't sure how to reconcile things. We live between the gap between promise and reality, and we often doubt the love of God being sufficient for us. And in the faith community, we aren't quite sure what to do with doubt, right? You know, we look at doubt kind of negatively. When others are doubting, we could be kind of critical of that, and yet we ourselves know that we doubt all the time, and yet we aren't quite sure how to express that, because we don't want to be sort of looked at as the person in church who has doubts. And even in our culture, you know, outside of the faith community, doubt is often talked about always as a negative thing, right? You know, we say, oh, do you think that you know, so-and-so will make it to the Super Bowl? We say, I doubt it. Right? You know, we talk about it, you know, very as sort of this kind of negative thing, right? We're just not quite sure what to do with it. And yet, when you look at particularly the Genesis story today, that's the one I want to focus on, Genesis chapter 15, the story of Abraham. We see this man, Abram, who doubted God tremendously. And yet he was a man who went down in the annals of biblical history and is mentioned in Hebrews chapter 11 as a man of faith. In fact, Genesis chapter 15, verse 6, which was read a few minutes ago, is the first time the word faith is mentioned in the Bible. And interestingly, this story is also the first time someone in the Bible is shown to have doubted God. So in this one story, Genesis 15, it's the first story in the Bible where someone is shown to have doubted God, but where someone is also shown to have had faith in God. And so all of that being said, I want to just take a few brief moments for us to explore the question, how does God respond to our doubts? And this story tells us that God responds with compassion and God responds with an invitation. So first of all, God responds to our doubt with compassion. You notice in verse 4, after God speaks to Abraham, whose name is Abram at the time, In verse 4, it says, but the word of the Lord came to him, to Abram. Now, it's interesting, different translations word this differently, but when it says, but the word of the Lord came to him, some translations say, then the word of the Lord came to him. This man will not be your heir, but a son who is your own flesh and blood will be your heir. But the word then or but, however it's translated, it is literally the word immediately the word of the Lord came to him. So a couple of things about this that are very important. It means that God responded very quickly, but also that God responded very nicely. He didn't humiliate Abram. He didn't make him feel guilty for doubting, but he quickly responded and said, Abram, it's okay. I get it that you're struggling. It's a pretty outlandish promise to tell you that when you're in your 90s, you're going to have a child and many, many descendants, and an incredible nation is going to be built. And from that, a church that's going to expand throughout the world for thousands of years. It's a bit to chew on. I get it, but it's okay. But that's precisely how the church should respond to people who doubt. In the book of Jude, verse 22, there's this beautiful verse that simply says, be merciful to those who doubt. So that's how God responds to our doubts, with compassion. But secondly, God responds to our doubts with an invitation. Verse 5, it says, God brought Abram outside and said, look toward heaven and count the stars if you are able to count them. Then he said, so shall your descendants be. Now I like this, that God took Abram outside. There's an invitation there for us. He's inviting us into this practice of learning to get outside of ourselves, to get outside of our own heads, to be challenged by something that is bigger than us and beyond our ability to fully comprehend. And one way to do that is to do exactly what Abram did, to get outside and look at the wonders of creation. Now, Teddy Roosevelt, it was quite a remarkable man in many ways. There's a man named William Beebe, who was a naturalist who used to go camping with Teddy Roosevelt. And he wrote about these experiences. And Roosevelt, one of the things he used to do during his presidency, he would sometimes leave the White House for weeks at a time and go out to Yellowstone and just go to other places just by himself or with friends and just go camping. No phone, no way to get in touch with him, no Secret Service, nothing. You imagine that? I wouldn't do that. You know, and who am I? And yet, imagine a president doing that. it's unbelievable. But he would do this. And William Beebe, his friend who often would go with him, wrote about it. And on one occasion, he writes this. He said, after an evening talk, perhaps about the fringes of knowledge or something new, some new possibility of climbing into the minds and senses of animals, Roosevelt and I would go out on the lawn where we took turns at an amusing little astronomical rite. We searched until we found, with or without our glasses, the faint, heavy spot of light mist beyond the lower left-hand corner of the great square of Pegasus. When one or the other of us would then recite, that is the spiral galaxy in Andromeda. It is as large as our Milky Way. It is one of 100 million galaxies. It is 750,000 light years away. It consists of 100 billion suns, each larger than our sun. And after an interval, Colonel Roosevelt would grin at me and say, "Now I think we are small enough. Let's retire and go to bed." We must have repeated this salutary ceremony 40 or 50 times in the course of years, but it never palled. You know, and that's really what faith is all about, right? It's not about trusting in some abstract idea, but it's about trusting in a real person, Jesus. And when we believe in Jesus, he counts us as righteous. See, when the story ends, that when Abraham believed God, God reckoned it to him as righteousness, it says in verse 6. He believed the Lord, and the Lord reckoned it to him as righteousness. Now, my grandfather, you know, was an old, hardworking Southern man from Virginia, Southern Democrat from the Depression era. You know, he used to use the word reckon. You know, he used to say, "Well, I reckon it's going to rain today." So I grew up hearing that word, and when I was a kid, I remember the first time I read this story, I thought that that was what the way that it was being used. And I just thought it meant that God was saying, "Well, I reckon maybe Abraham's righteous." You know, like he was saying, "Well, I guess maybe Abraham's a good person now." But that's actually not what it's saying. When he's saying, I reckon Abraham as righteous, he's saying, "I'm actually counting him as a righteous man. I'm crediting him as righteous. I'm imputing righteousness to him." This was an important verse for Martin Luther, because what he's saying is not that Abraham did something to be righteous, but rather because God granted him faith, God credited Abraham with the righteousness that only comes from God. Do you ever doubt that this God we've looked at here today really loves you? Do you ever doubt that the God that we worship each week could really forgive you? Be assured, God responds with compassion, but he also responds with the invitation to look outside of yourself, to look beyond your fears, and to look at the person and work of Jesus. Thanks be to God. Amen.